of performing. I told him the anecdote of how he'd once talked to Judy Garland's dresser before going on, and how Garland would always be totally hysterical. And so the dresser's technique was to get more hysterical so that Garland had to calm her down. And so he explains that's what's happening between Nathan Lane and Hank Azaria's character. Great insights like that all through the
director board. as therapist, really understanding how to.
All right. Well, we both agree it's a really good book.
Yeah, he's one of the best people doing. You know, and what it reminded me of, frankly, was some of Sean Levy's books in the way that it just does such a good job of getting at. You know, it is that kind of one thing after another telling of a career. But it also points out connections between people you might not have been aware of, coincidences in life that are so fascinating, and you know, really does give you some insight into how this stuff gets made.
That's true, and I think the best thing you can say about it is that it makes you want to see some of the movies again.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, which continues Saturday, November 18th with Hubby Jenkins. A live concert of old-time American music following African-American influence in America's traditional music forms. That's Hubby Jenkins on Saturday, November 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO.
Good morning. This is Consuelo, Once Upon a Time, One More Time, here at KBOO. And happy to be here and ready to listen to your question, commentaries, or paragraph if you have been reading something. I will let you know the time our line will be open. Our phone number anyway is 503-231-8187. As always, we are asking for your generosity and collaboration to this wonderful station that it has as a philosophy, the community. This is our community here in Portland and another town. And so please don't forget to support our station, KBOO, by becoming a member today. You can go to the KBOO.fm and give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. We will be very grateful to you, and that will keep us working and having a kind of program that we will have today. At the same time, I want to read what was my writing prompt that I left last time when I was here. And one was from the song Lucia, and written by Joan Manuel Serrat. And nothing is more beautiful than what I never had. And I wrote, nothing is more beautiful than your kiss, which I never had. And in Spanish is nada es más bello que lo que nunca he tenido. So there you are. You can write something following that prompt, and then later you can read to us. I am very honored and happy to present our guest, a nice, wonderful woman that I met in writing around Portland this year, early this year. Her name is Lily. And she is going to talk to us about her foundation where she works. She is a program administration, and she is in charge also of many activity within the foundation. She is a collaborator, and writing about around Portland is since 1999 has been on the air, bringing together people to write, heal, and transform. What is exactly what we are trying to do in this program. That is the reason because I thought in bringing her so this way you can know more about writing around Portland. So here is Lily. Lily, all yours.
Well, thank you for having me, Consuelo. My name is Lily. I work at Write Around Portland. I've been with Write Around since, 2019, and I started working here for the last year. And, yeah, I'm just really welcome to be on the show.
Yeah. What is interesting about this program, Writing Around Portland, is that they concentrate and celebrate all voices, exactly what we do in this station. So there is a collaboration and also a same kind of philosophy because their program help the homeless, prison, people who are in prison, hospital, treatment center, and a school. They go to those places to find people who have some talent or who don't have any talent to write or who have never written, isn't it?
Yeah. Really? You're absolutely right. So Write Around Portland is a nonprofit that we are a creative writing organization we facilitate storytelling in underheard communities. We partner up with social service agencies to build community. So you're right. Like since 1999, we've been hosting writing workshops at hospitals, treatment centers, homeless shelters, senior care homes, correctional facilities, and more. Our work is all about building community through writing. And we also have open to the public workshops as well.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what we're trying to do here because I spoke from the beginning that words are healing tools. When we start writing about ourselves or our life, it comes across who we are. And I think it's very important to know who we are so this way we know where we are going. When sometimes we are lost in time and space like I was many years ago. Anyway, tell me more about how the organization work in relation to get the people to participate in the workshop.
Yeah, so what makes our workshop so special is that it gives people a chance to share stories, right? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that those stories are autobiographical. In fact, like one of our guidelines is that the workshop is that we'll respond to our writing as if it's fiction, a way of giving space between the narrator of the piece and the author. Now, that being said, the safety of the workshops, it creates a space where people are writing stories that are really relatable and like resonates with their fellow participants and the readers of the anthology. So these are usually 8 to 10 weeks long. And then at the end of it, it culminates to an anthology of all of our writers that season and a public reading, which you've gone to.
Yeah. I went this year. This year was? Oh, last
yes,
year.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
This year I went so I could listen to many of the story and see the author. And what was very nice to me was the spectrum of people from different age, different races, different background. And that community is very appealing to me. And I thought also that to be motivating people to write is education. And I do believe in education strongly. You brought a piece from one of the people who participate, is published in the book. You can read it and tell.
So this piece is coming from our latest anthology, Through a Kaleidoscope. It's our 60th anthology. Mm. And it was from our spring workshops. This is from Patty L., who participated in the Alano Club of Portland workshop.
Yeah.
So just to give a little context.
Sure.
So this is one adventure after another. Once I found booze, my life became a series of daring adventures, like living in Athens, Greece for 3 years. San Francisco was fun, but I wanted to broaden my scope and become an international beatnik. Wine was cheap. I could fill the entire backseat of a taxi with multiple gallons of wine for about $10. Toward the end of my stay, there was a military coup. All foreigners were loaded on buses and transported to a secret destination. I imagine being lodged in a rustic country inn with singing and dancing in the bar at night. We were unloaded at a deserted, broken-down army barracks about 8 hours from Athens. The half gallon of wine I packed ran out fast. I didn't know it, but abruptly withdrawing from alcohol is dangerous for a person addicted to it. Fortunately, a doctor from Denmark who brought his medical bag at the last minute was able to save my life. I can still see that quivering 30-year-old me surrounded by people I have never met. 6 months later, my dad and I boarded a flight that would eventually take us to Palm Springs. My parents had received a telegram from the U.S. State Department that read, "Daughter in 5-day coma, not expected to live. Ship body or bury here." And just so you know, I talked to Patty and said that she said that this had a happy ending. So don't worry.
Yes, yes. Of course, has a happy ending. It's a very impressive story, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
Very impressive because she is very honest. Mm-hmm. That is what, and it's interesting that at the same time, there is a coup in Athens, in Greece, and she is in a kind of a coup too, because she is on the edge because of her problem. And I think it's remarkable that she remembered that particular moment that was a crisis. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think what I love about this piece, and when she had read it for Raise Your Pen, which is our annual fundraiser, there were so many people in the room who brought the tears and were just really touched by it, was also the reason why I wanted to feature her piece here today.
Yeah, I think you did very well because it's, like I said, very touching and honest. That is what is more important when we write, especially if we are writing about ourselves. It's a different thing when you write something that is a fantastic idea, something like that. I will give you again our phone number, 503-231-8187, and I will open the lines. So you have something else that I am so happy that she brought because she listened our program last time and I was talking about, the first time I was talking about my diary and she brought her own diary when she was 11 years old. So almost the same that I was talking. So she's going to read and we will talk about that.
Yeah, so, okay, the reason why I brought this was because I listened to your piece, and yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, this brings back memories. So this is the earliest I have. This is dated Monday, April 2nd, 2001, 3 p.m. If you ever read any of my diaries, you probably know my life. There might be some misspelled words, so if you never read any of my other diaries, I'll fill you in. I'm a fifth grader that has A, B, or A on a row, and a sucky life. Oh yeah, everyone wants to be me, but you don't know the half of it. My parents are Chinese, and so am I. People say that Asian people are smart, but that's not true. Okay, getting back to the point. My parents always look up to my older brothers, no matter what happens, like I'm the student of the year or winning an essay contest. They never congratulate me. My dad is calling me to eat, so I'll fill you in later. 3:43 p.m. So where was I? Oh, yeah. Well, I told you mostly everything. So read other stuff that happens to me. Bye.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. I think it's beautiful. And now, how can you describe yourself at that age? Do you remember?
Very, very confident. I think that, you know, not much difference than now, but yeah. A little bit more on the... I don't think I really fully realized just how influential my parents were in, like, giving me that trust and giving me that support throughout that time.
Yeah, but you mentioned there that they have a different treatment between you and your brother.
That was my 11-year-old self. I think,
of course.
You know, going back to it, so both of my parents came over from Vietnam during the Vietnam War.
Yes.
And I was born in Louisiana in a small town. So I had two older brothers and a younger sister. And I think something about them that I love is the fact that they kind of gave me a resiliency because they didn't pass on that trauma. to me and my siblings. And I think because of that, it's because of what they gave me throughout and the confidence that they gave me is what kind of led me to continue my community work now that I am more than two decades afterwards.
Yeah, that is the reason that make you an empathic person and very solidary also with others. So that is the reason because you work where you work, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, this, yeah. Right Around Portland was where I kind of like, this is my dream job. So I'm really happy.
What other talent you still have from that wonderful girl that wrote that piece that I love it?
I continued the journal, actually, since then.
Yeah.
So even though I've never really published like an autobiographical work, I think journaling is something that has helped me throughout the years over the, you know, last two decades. And yeah. It's almost as if it's that, like, I don't know if you ever read or watch a Harry Potter, but there is this thing that they have that's like a pool and they put their thoughts into it. So kind of like unleash it, letting it sit somewhere else, right? And I think that journaling has always been that for me.
I agree completely because I have had a diary since I was 10 or 11, the same situation. And before coming here, I was writing in my diary at 6 o'clock in the morning because yesterday was too late when I came to home. Mm. And I think, one way of write autobiography is to write in a diary. Mm. It's one of the forms that we use to talk about ourselves and to read. The nice thing about having a piece like a diary is that then you go back, like you did, find your oldest diary, and you can compare and contrast, and also you can evaluate your life in certain ways, and you can see some consistency with your value and your belief. That means that at 11 years old, you already knew in some way where you were going. Mm-hmm. So this is very important because sometimes parents think that because they're younger children, they don't have any idea about anything. Mm-hmm. That is not true because we all, as a child or children, we do have a brain. And we listened to Matthew last time too and his wonderful poem. In my opinion, I would ask, if I was a teacher, I would ask my student to have a diary in a classroom. Mm. So this way they can start having the habit of writing. Mm. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree. I'm curious. How often do you go back to your old diaries to read through those?
Bueno, the one I found when I was moving, packing, it was for a gift when I was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And I have a travel diary, gratitude diary, and the daily diary, all in one diary. Mm-hmm. And because I learned many years ago through Oprah, who brought to her program a woman who wrote more or less a gratitude diary. Mm-hmm. It's a book where with all kind of sentence, beautiful sentence, and I thought this is a wonderful idea. So the final product is that you find at least five good things that happened to you mm-hmm. that day, that particular day. Even if it was rough, mm-hmm. you have to concentrate and to think, okay, I am alive, I have food, I have a shelter, I have friend, I have a job, mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. a beautiful day, was a beautiful day, anything you want. Mm-hmm. But that, in my opinion, give you a sense of gratitude that is very important in life to have.
Oh, yes.
Even when you are suffering,
yeah.
we have to. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that with these journals, I feel as if it kind of creates. So one of the reasons why I write now is to track the changes of who I've been throughout the time that I've written through that journal, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that is to see where's my character now in the beginning of this, and where's the end where this journal ends, right? And I think that the way I tell that story changes throughout, right? So something happens to me and I tell it, and there is a particular feeling or a particular emotion that's attached to it. So by the end of that journal, when I write about it again, I track that change between the moment it happened and the way that it was at towards that end. And then just to see, where have I changed in the telling of that, right?
How interesting. So you, the beginning, you are like a very subjective, and then you are an observer of yourself.
In some ways. I feel as if it's both subjective, but that subjectiveness changes, right?
Yeah, of course, it does. But because you become an observer, so you are, when you are a reader of your own, this is more or less the role that we take, because this way we can be kind of objective and think and evaluate, okay, what this event happened and how this event had an impact in my life now. So you, I will tell our listener that our phone number is 503-231-8187. Our lines are open for your comment, question, ideas, suggestion, anything you want. Call, please. Okay, so you have another piece for the for your actual diary now.
So I pulled the piece from my earliest, and now this is when I start a new journal. I do a thing now where I kind of create an introduction, even though this journal is just for me. I never know if maybe one day, you know, someone might find it. So I always, with the first page, always kind of do an introduction to it as a way of like, I don't know what's going to be filled in this, but here we go. So August 11, 2023, 10:58 a.m. Friday. They often say that an empty page is the most intimidating, but I see it holding so many possibilities. This journal is both a recording of the past for you, the reader, as well as a retelling of a future I can't foresee yet. Like all of my journals, this is a record of my life and of the changes I'll undergo from now to the end of this journal. It contains my many thoughts, lessons that I've come to embody in my day-to-day life. Maybe some doodles and mind maps as I try to process both the world and my place in it. More than anything, this journal is about relationships. I made a vow to myself 6 years ago that I would explore and understand what it means to have human connections. Over the course of the last few years, I've seen it take many forms. Trauma, care, action, presence, community, love. The world has changed a lot since the start of the pandemic 3.5 years ago. Though the gears of modern life is once again turning, the rocky infrastructure continues to bear the weight of greed, racism, and inequality. This is a journal about adapting to the changes that will continually come, and in turn, my own influence in that change. This is a story about who I am at each moment in time.
Oh, you are a good writer, without any doubt. You are a very good writer. I love it. I think there's so much deepness in that piece of yours, and philosophy, and self-awareness, and honesty, too. Yes, I think it's wonderful the way how you describe our world after a pandemic, as you said, and how it has been changed. So it's not only, and this is the sociological aspect that I love about diaries or autobiography, is that you have to immerse yourself in your community, because otherwise, go and live in an island. And you do it wonderfully. I am so proud of you, Lily, really, because it's I think those diaries should be published. Yes, in your lifetime, my dear, because it shows so much as a Chinese descendant, and all the problem and situation that your parents have to live and encounter. That also bring a lot of sociological study, because they were not the only one. That moment in the world was very, very important in Asia. And I think definitely this should be published. How do you see this now that you read it here? How you see this introduction, wonderful introduction to our wonderful piece, that must be a wonderful piece, no doubt.
You know, I think that for one thing, I feel as if this is something that is a moment in history, right? So for me, my history, personal history, as well as a bigger, larger history, right? Because in my earlier diary, this was written in 2001. That was like in a few months afterwards was September 11th. Yes. And I, as an 11-year-old, wrote about that. But through an 11-year-old child's eyes, right? So there is that kind of just prosperity, like, of just keeping a record, right, an archive. And then I think even though I probably might not publish this, this is something that I will probably pass down to people in the future, you know.
Yeah, you will do exactly what I am asking my listener to do, to write the story of their life, to give it to their children, grandchildren, friend, whoever person is related to them, and this way they can know them in a better way, because the past is very important. Even we don't need to be living in the past, but we are the result of our past.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is so meaningful, that you cannot delete and erase. And that is the reason that when somebody lose that capacity, because Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or dementia, that doesn't have that important history in his mind, is terrible, because even you are a caretaker perhaps, and you cannot relate to the person who he became, what is completely different and the person that you met, and you cannot even mention something from the past, because there are nothing there. It's an empty ocean, no fish, no nothing. And that is the reason, because this kind of document, diaries, memoir, autobiography, are important, because the way how we learn from others, how they confront pain, war, love, rejection, all those emotion and feeling that we all as human have, and we need to share to learn from other people in some way or another. What do you think?
You know, I agree, and I wonder if part of this, now that we're talking about it, doesn't have to be in written form. And a lot of this is passing of stories, you know. And for my parents, there was the passing of stories, you know, through speaking, right, to telling the stories from one generation to the next. And I think that's also what we do with Right Around Portland, even though we don't assume that these are, like, personal stories. The fact that these stories are being told at the readings, in this anthology, the sharing of stories is something that people can really resonate with and then see themselves in, right? So I think, kind of connecting it back to Right Around Portland, these writing workshop, writing in community, and like sharing in community kind of promotes a sense of vulnerability and trust,
yes,
right, between community members, as well as just an affirmation. If you hear your story being told, right, even though, you know, it might not be exactly your story, right, but a sense of some of that is something that, like, stirs something within you. It affirms your story, too. It makes it more real in some sense in this public eye.
And in some way make more real and more valuable your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good uplifting of your self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the group of people that you protect and that you bring this service, like the treatment center, for example, as a person who had cancer years ago, yeah, I think it's very important to be with the people who are sick, not only mentally, but also physically, because they need to write in the present or in the future how they felt about it. In my case, I felt completely disconnected between my head and my body. So the painting that is in my book, the ebook that I mentioned to you before, I found a painting for one of my co-worker where I work that is exactly that. She has the neck full of blood. And when I saw the painting, I told him, I start crying. And she said, don't cry, Consuelo. I don't want you to cry for my painting. And I said, I am not crying for your painting. It's me. That woman over there is me. This is the way how I felt, disconnected. All the time I thought I was healthy, and I was healthy. And suddenly, from one day to another, 1 year to another, I wasn't healthy anymore. This is what the doctor said. So that disconnection with your own self, with your own body, is very dramatic, very dramatic. Only the person who has been going through that kind of event, not necessarily only cancer, of course, can feel how much you need to put that feeling on paper. You are talking about oral traditional tradition. Yes, the folklore in my country, Chile, this is one way how the folklore went passing from generation to generation. Indigenous group, this is what they did all the time. So you are right. But how I am a writer, I want people to write, not only to tell it orally, you see. So now we have the time to collaborate again. So please show your support for our beloved Kibu OO and become a member today. We are community founders, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kbuoo.fm/give or text Kibu KBOO to this number 44321. Okay, so what else can you tell us about writing about Portland?
So right around Portland, kind of speaking to the like what you were saying with treatment and you know, kind of finding a community within people who can understand like personally what you're going through. That is something that we have a lot within right around Portland workshops. Is that so? For instance, we have workshops at the Oregon Burn Center. We have workshops like Resonate, which I'm helping coordinate. Resonate is the BIPOC workshops. And there is something to be said about just having a shared either experience or identity, right? Where people in that room gets it. You know, they're like, yeah, no, I've been through that. And the nice thing about with right around Portland's workshops is that you don't actually have to write about that experience, right? You're invited to if you want to, but you don't have to. You can write about anything. We've had many stories, you know, one of them about a toaster man, right? And it is just the most fantastical, amazing work, right? It can be about fiction. It can be whatever you want it to be. And I think that sharing of those stories kind of opens up something where people can be.
Yes, I think the freedom that they incentivate is very important, because it's not a class, it's a workshop. Workshop has that tendency, in my opinion, that you open the door to the subject of the moment. In this case, it's writing around Portland. And I feel that they like that freedom, because sometimes I am sure that some of the people who attend this workshop, they have no idea that they will be able to write in the first place, or they don't have any idea about what they will write. So how they have that kind of empty feel. I am going to do this, but I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want to do it. And suddenly the idea come and the text flow and they start cutting, adding punctuation, and suddenly they have a piece. They have a text that is almost a surprise. It's a different feeling for a writer, but also, at the same time, it's the same, because when you are in front of the empty white page, that is what we call the dry period, where you don't write anything, and so you feel like, oh my God, I am losing this capacity, so now I am not able to even to write a message. What is going on? That happened also. Do you consider yourself as a writer too?
Actually, to be honest, no.
Be honest. Yeah, Lily, I don't expect more than from you than to be honest.
What's so funny is that I, along with a lot of the participants who attend the workshops, do not consider ourselves as writers. You know, I write a lot. I journal a lot. I do write poetry. But a professional writer, no. But because I feel as if there is a concept of the writer, the solitary writer, you know, who gets published and stuff. And I feel as if writing for me is a tool to build that community, right? So yeah. That's also, you bring up a really good point that this is not a class, that this is a workshop where the facilitator, not the teacher, is also a participant of this workshop. We are just there to write with you. We give you prompts. We keep time, but we are also going to share with you. And I think another thing that about these workshops is that we give positive and specific feedback. So the way that it works is that I as a facilitator will give you two prompts. You can write anything you want. You don't actually have to use the prompts if you don't want to. And then when we share and give feedback, the way that we do the feedback is, so you've just written this within the last 5 to 10 minutes. We're not going to talk bad about this piece. We want to offer positive, specific feedback to give people that sense of, I can share, and it's going to be okay. No one's going to judge me for what I share. Right.
Yeah, I think that is very not only important but fundamental to the concept of the workshop, and to have a facilitator and not necessarily a teacher. This is what I said in my first program at the radio, the station. We are not going to criticize anybody. We are not going to correct the English. I am nobody to correct the English anyway. And that kind of freedom is very essential. Right now, I will read again the prompt that I gave you last time. The second is, nothing is more love than what I lost. I think it's a very nice, and in Spanish will be, nada es más amado que lo que perdí. And what I wrote was, nothing is more love than your blue eyes, which I lost. Those two prompts are kind of not only nice but very profound, and we love it, and I think it will help anybody to write whatever they decide to write. Tell me something more about your parents, your upbringing, because you mentioned, but we didn't have the time to talk about. So
My parents, so my parents, you know, what's so funny is that growing up, we actually didn't talk anything about the Vietnam War. It was not something they ever brought up. Anytime I asked about it, they would say, well, we got here. That's all that matters, you know. And I think that is something that I wish, so I have the myth of what happens, but I don't really know exactly truly what happened, right? And I think that what I'm doing now is a way of, like, but they gave me so much safety, right? They gave me safety, they gave me encouragement, they gave me a sense of compassion that I definitely took for granted when I was younger, right? And that now that I want to pass on, right, along with stories.
Very good. I will comment about that, but it seemed that we have a caller, so here I am. Hi.
Hi. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Leia. I actually work with Lily.
I met you too.
I and Consuela, we met at the reading in the spring, and I just wanted to say that I'm really loving, there's so many things about this conversation that I am resonating with. From the programming that we do, you know, we're writing with people, and, you know, we do give them the opportunity to publish in a book, and we you know, come out with that twice a year, which is, you know, the reading that you went to, Consuelo. But one interesting thing for me, I work on the engagement side of things. People who have written with us, like, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, they will reach out to us and they'll say, hey, I remember taking a write-around workshop, and I think I was published. I don't remember the name. I don't remember what year exactly. But they're like, I want a copy. You know, do you have a copy? And we keep an archive of them. You know, some we don't have anymore, but it's really exciting when, you know, I'll run over to that cabinet and dig up, I'll look them up and I'll find out what workshop they're in and what book they were in. And then, you know, they will send it to them and they get it. And for a lot of these people that wrote with us, they were writing with us during a time that they were really struggling. And they kept this workshop experience with them, you know, for whatever reason it was, if it was the community aspect or whatnot. And they will tell us often, you know, how their lives have changed in that time. And it's really cool.
I agree. I think it's very cool, and it's a wonderful contribution to our community. I am very, very proud of having Lily here and to be talking about all the things that you do. Because, like I said, it's very similar to what our station is doing every day with all the programs that we have. And that is the reason, because we need help and collaboration. Yeah. And I have an idea. I think for the next anniversary, 25 years, 30 years, who knows, you should, the anthology should be about the best story of the all year or the last 10 years. That will be wonderful, because this way we'll promote again to the people that maybe they didn't have a chance to get a book, and that selection will be very carefully done. And so you will pick the best pieces, and it will be great, because this way is one way to celebrate what you do too. Not only the one for that particular semester, you know, the whole 10-year or 5-year. It's an idea only, but I was thinking about that when I was listening to you, because I think we have to promote more what you do. Yes, we have, and we're doing right now.
I love the alignment of values. Like, collaboration is definitely one of a very strong personal value of mine.
Yes, yes.
And I love that you're thinking about the 25th
anniversary. Yes, of course. Of course, we have to think ahead. Even I will not be here probably. But I want our talent and our philosophy of life to keep going ahead. I don't want us to become indifferent.
And just to like add on to what you were saying, Leia, I think that the fact that it has made such an impact to a person who had written 20 years ago. I remember the first reading I have ever went to for a write around reading, and I was volunteering, and then this person who was at the end at first didn't want to read, and then by the end of that reading read their piece, and everyone in the crowd stood up and clapped and cheered. And
beautiful.
it was just something that I think, like, I hope that's something that's, you know, like, they kept, right, in their memories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Mm. Okay, we appreciate, you cannot know how happy she is, and I am very, very happy that you call and give your perspective and more information about what you do. Lily is going to talk later about the collaboration. So don't worry. We are going to collaborate. As always, we do.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank
you very much.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah.
Yes. Bye-bye, Leah. Okay. So in relation to what we were talking about your parents, I think that act of generosity that they didn't talk, they didn't transfer to you and your sibling the pain that they were going through the moment, is an act of generosity and tremendous love. I told you that when you told me that the same thing the first when we met.
Mm-hmm.
And but now I think maybe you have to incorporate that to your diary. I think it's very important. I believe that to get to know our ancestor, your parents, your grandparents, in one way or another, is very important, because this way we really have a picture of who we are and why. It's not only important from the health perspective, that is always important because there is a genetic composition, but also the ambience of the people where they develop. Okay, it seems that we have another call. Hi.
Hi, Consuelo. This is Norma.
Yeah, I was waiting for you, my dear.
Yeah, well, you know, I found out what you were talking about this morning, and I had a meeting till just now, and so I'm only able to call in right away for a few minutes. But you mentioned that it was words that we use that are healing and all, and I have to admit I've had not a lot of trauma in my life.
Good.
But when I lost my husband, of course, that was a little bit of trauma or heartbreak. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I learned from that experience, and I learned how to be compassionate with other people and have empathy for them, so that when I talk with them, I can give them some words of encouragement rather than just be so sad with them. I mean, which you do, but you look at people differently when they're going through that grieving process. And I feel like I now have the words to help people out. So that was, you know, even though it was a trauma for me at the time, I think I've grown a lot because of it.
Nice, nice. Well, that is a whole paragraph in itself, because so many nice emotion and feeling, my dear Norma. And yes, you are a very kind person to begin with. So I don't think that you needed that kind of trauma to develop more, but it seemed, in your own opinion, that this trauma helped you to open up your heart and to become more empathic toward the people who are or who were in the same situation that you were. Well, it's one way that life start teaching us. You are here to learn. You like it or you don't like it. Or if you don't learn at the first thing that I'm going to give you, the first trauma, you will learn at the second or the third, but you will have to learn. This is the reason we are here, and this is it.
And, thank you so much for calling in, Norma. And I think, you know, to kind of speak on to having gone through something, right? Something that that was so impactful and so, like, hard for you. I think it does help in the sense of, like, being able to make more space, right? To be able to be like, you know what? I went through that. I went through that too. And, right? And
Yesterday, oh no, the day before, one of the co-worker, a young woman who just married, we were talking about losing our husband. So my advice to her was enjoy life with him, keep him, and be happy, because time really ran faster than we thought, especially when we are younger. Okay, my dear, I appreciate very much, as always. So I wait for you every Friday. I wait for you, and I am so happy, and I am looking forward maybe to visit you, my dear. I would like to make a trip, perhaps in March, something like that, with the better weather.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I find your program very interesting and very helpful in many regards, so I appreciate the fact that you're doing it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it, too. I think it's very meaningful. That is what is important, and I hope it help people in all kind of circumstances to listen, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and words are for that. So it's important. Okay, so talk to you later. Bye-bye, my dear. Thank you. So we were talking about your parents and the story with your parents that I found it very interesting. So I think it's the only, and a suggestion as a friend, it's not in position because you can do, of course, you can do whatever you want. But I think will be interested to know their version of the story, and why they took that kind of approach, not involve you all of you directly in the trauma that they were living, and how they describe that trauma. And as a writer, I think it will be even not only just important, but it will give you a more sense of community with the Chinese community, where you belong. Yes, I think it's important. You don't think so? Or what is
actually,
you
know what's so interesting is that I've learned so much more about the history because of the communities that I've built here, right, of Chinese and Vietnamese, like American, of the children, of the people who came and learning about that experience. So I think that, you know, being able to talk to them, and then actually, I actually did go back down to Louisiana and then asking these questions.
Oh, good.
Right. Good. So as a way of archiving and a way of like getting their stories down from as an adult now, as an adult child to them. So I understood why they didn't do it. And then now also I want to know that history. Right.
So. Yeah, I think it's important from the perspective, like we were talking before, the history. And also in what appealed to me is the sociological aspect of how people live at the time, how they support themselves, how they eat, where the food came from. Basic need, you see. And sometimes we don't even think that people need water. Only now that we see it on the TV or in the in the internet, what is going on now in the world, we are aware of those things. But before that time was the radio, only the radio. That was a wonderful thing about it, that got that communication. And anyway, I will interview your parents. If you don't do it, I will go and interview your parents because I want to know. Where I work, there is a woman who is like you, but her family is divided because some people feel for China and another people feel for Taiwan. So there is an internal crisis all the time. So neither of them can talk about China or Taiwan because they got in a fight. Can you believe? It is interesting. Okay, you have something to tell us?
Yes. So just a few community announcements. So the Right Around Portland's having a winter reading on December 14th on Thursday. It's going to be held at the First United Methodist Church at on Jefferson Street, so Southwest Jefferson. The doors are going to open at 6 p.m. and the program's going to start around 6:30. This was where I first like realized I wanted to be a volunteer facilitator, you know, listening to people's words and realizing, oh my gosh, I want to hold that space, you know. So I really encourage. So we're going to have writers from, you know, all of our workshops this season, from like All Good Northwest, Do Good Multnomah, Home Ford, Home Plate, Maybell Center, the Oregon Burn Center, and the Springdale Job Corps. So it's a lot of us. I just really encourage everybody to come and listen to our readers' words. So there's that that's happening. The other thing that's happening is, so I am part of a multidisciplinary writing group for queer and trans AAPI writers, and we are called Liminal Bodies. So tomorrow, in conjunction with PICA, the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art, is having a show at 7 p.m. called Make Banana Cry, so bringing queer and trans AAPI artists from, I believe in Quebec. So that's happening. And right afterwards, we're also doing a Literoki. So we have three QT AAPI poets who are going to be reading their pieces. And then right afterwards, following up with some karaoke. So it's going to be fun. That's going to be tomorrow night at PICA at 7 p.m.
Great. Many good invitation to all of us to collaborate and to go to this event and to participate in the reading. I think to participate as an audience.
Yeah.
And because it's, this is exactly, I was selected by you and Leah and Sarah to become a facilitator, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. I couldn't do it this semester because of my schedule, but I will see if next semester I have a better schedule so I can attend, because you prepare the person who is going to be the facilitator, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's every facilitator is 27 hours of training, and then they are the ones who facilitate the workshops that are 8 to 10 weeks, or they can do the one-time workshops too, so... I'm so looking forward to you going in. It's coming in January.
Yeah, me too, because this way I will have more people coming to this show. All my, I will say, co-worker or student or who knows, literary lover. That sounds much better. So one more time, show your support for our beloved Key Boo 00, and become a member today if it's possible. We are community funded, so we need your support to get there. That is very important. We have to keep our wonderful program. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text kboo to this number 44321. And it's time for the music.
Thank you so much.
No, I will say bye-bye to you. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Her memory, she is smiling alone. In the lamplight, the withered leaves collect at my feet, and the wind begins to mourn. Memory, all alone in the moonlight, I can dream of the old days. Life was beautiful then. The memory live again. Every street lamp seems to beat a fatalistic warning. Someone mutters and the street lamp sputters.
This wonderful music, and Barbara Streisand brought a lot of memories to myself. But I would like to say thank you to my Lily, dear Lily, and to give us a full report of information about what she does and her community and her the foundation where she works right in around Portland.
Thank you so much, Consuelo, for having me here. This has been such an honor. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. An honor to us also, because, like I said many times during the program, I think we have to collaborate within each other too. And this is the reason because I thought about you coming here. And we will close our wonderful program with Jacqueline Dupré, one of the best of the best cello composer and player from the 20th century. She died at 42 of a terrible disease that didn't allow her to play the cello. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye, my dear. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy viernes 17 de noviembre del 2023. La Organización de las Naciones Unidas advierte que Gaza se está convirtiendo en un cementerio de niños, mientras Israel bombardea hospitales y ambulancias. Israel intensifica el ataque terrestre y aéreo a Gaza mientras el número de muertos supera los 10.000. Ataques aéreos israelíes matan a 45.